Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome James Gilbert.
Well, I'm James Gilbert from Strange Occurrences. We formed in 2005 basically as a kind of conceptual art project, believe it or not. I think we're the only paranormal investigation group to form under that basis. We formed in 2005. We're thinking of putting ourselves forward as a kind of working conceptual art project for the Venice Biennale. And I downloaded the PDF of 19 pages of what they require and top flight curators and top flight artists. They could have saved themselves the 19 pages by just saying, no riffraff. So in the end, we didn't apply for the Venice Biennale, but we did start to get some people contacting us, asking us to do investigations, and also sending us photographs. And within our group of investigators, both Mark, who was walking around here a few minutes ago and has wisely made himself scarce, and myself are professional photographers. So we have a bit of knowledge in that department, sort of 40 or 50 years combined experience. And we've been sent quite a lot of photographs. So the kind of structured, solid ground part of this talk will be about paranormal photographs. And from there, I'm going to shift on to much, much more shaky ground, which is really just going to be conjecture and kind of hunches. I'm going to go past these photos of us quite quickly. That's the... Eerie,
eh? Yeah.
10-second exposure, and after like 6 seconds, I said, right, move out of the photo. So it wasn't really done electronically. It was just done optically. I guess it shows you how easy it is to fake a ghost photograph. We have, as you've seen, we have a bit of gear with us. Something about paranormal investigation seems to, I guess the model is perhaps the TAPS guys. Has anyone seen that TAPS program on TV? They're plumbers. They started off as plumbers, but they found that people wanted to, you know, ask them about why they've got certain noises and rattles in their house, and they transmogrified from plumbers into paranormal investigators, and that kind of took off. TAP stands for the Atlantic Paranormal Society, and they're on the east coast of the US, and they've got a TV program. They've kind of set the trend for having a lot of gear, and they've almost established by that TV program, which all paranormal investigators will download and watch, how you go about paranormal investigation. That is that you find your site, it might be this room, and you come in and you set up electronic surveillance cameras which have little infrared lights on them, and you go dark like we did, and you rely on night vision and infrared light sources, flashes on cameras, night vision. I've got my old Russian jobby here. This is our night vision equipment. You turn it on, it glows green. Cool. Anyone want to have a look? Hand it round. I want it back. hold the button down, and you can see a green glow through it. So you go about with the stuff, and there is a certain theatricality in that. You know, we're kind of treading the line. Like, we do this as a hobby, and partly we do it to entertain ourselves. Yeah, I mean, there is that aspect to it. This is a thing that you saw us waving around. I've got another one here. This one says on the back of it, because I got this off the internet, off Trade Me, it says Natural Healing Therapies, S.H. Bardowski, I think his name is, and it's distributed by Altered States for Gundry Street, Newton, Auckland. People who are concerned about health issues use these meters to pick up things like microwave leakage. It will, if you put it near your microwave, it'll tell you that you really shouldn't be standing close to it watching things cook, because they do leak. It picks up the presence of magnetic fields, and if I turn this to the magnetic 0 to 3 milligauss range and move it near this projector or near the computer, it's triggering. Now, there is a there is a lot of assumptions around... I think my voice is making it go. There's a lot of assumptions around... It is, it's going up and down all over the show. I don't know if you can see it, but it picks up anything. It'll pick up the computer, it'll pick up the lights. It'll pick up... Yeah, there are entities. It'll pick up my cell phone. There is a big assumption, and that is... It'll pick up girls. There's a big assumption that if there is a materialization of a spirit or an imminent materialization of a spirit, somehow that will affect the electromagnetic spectrum and the meter will detect it and it will give you a reading in milligauss or tesla, which are different versions of the same thing. It is a big assumption, and as you're all aware, it's an assumption that you can't test because you cannot produce a ghost or a spirit to test it on. That's one of the assumptions that you'll see in action when you see television programs on paranormal investigation. I'm going to move right along. That's the Russian night vision. That's the photo I should have used as my profile photo in the program, really.
Yeah.
That's why it's there. Without the equipment, what you do is you spend a lot of time sitting around in dark rooms at night in the quiet trying to sort of pick up on stuff. That's us doing that. Oh, is there any members of the rationalists or the humanist societies here? Bound to be a few. You'll be happy to know that the HQ of the rationalists in Auckland, we couldn't find any paranormal activity there. That's the library. That's the Beckett Memorial Library downstairs, which skeptics actually have lending rights. Yeah, they all fled. have lending rights to. And the only evidence of spiritual activity we found down there was that. The evidence for the supernatural. There's a little stain on here. I'm not sure if it's ectoplasm. but that's all we found. Actually, we did that ghost hunt in cooperation with some art students from Elam who were doing a paranormal investigation as part of an art project. So naturally, we were the people to approach. It was a good night. Orbs. We'll get on to the photography bit. Did anybody see the TV3 item on Strange Occurrences about, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago? Vicky was in it, I was in it, Mark and Denise were in it in the background somewhere. Orbs kind of came up, and I think the camera guy kind of caught one of our guys with some orb photos, and Vicky then commented on them, and something which I agree with 100%. What causes orbs? You may already know this, but since the arrival of compact digital cameras, which have very short focal length lenses and flashes positioned close to the lens, you get a lot of photos like these. I found that this 35mm camera that I carried around in my pocket for about 10 years in the 1990s, although it's very similar in layout and design, it has a short focal length lens for a 35mm camera and it has a flash positioned right close to it. I must have taken, I don't know, 300 rolls of film on this, and I didn't really get any orb photos. More interestingly, I went through some of my photos the other day to see if there are any photos which could possibly be mistaken for photos of paranormal activity or the supernatural. I didn't find any. Yet this camera and this camera, this is a digital version of this. Well, the difference is in the focal length of the lens. This camera has about a 5mm focal length lens, which has incredible depth of field. And it's recording on a chip that is 4 or 5mm across. So everything's very small scale. And what that means is that's an orb, by the way. That's a close-up. Can you see that? Fascinating little things. That's a photo that was sent in to us. What that means is you get a lot of these orb photos, and what they are, almost exclusively is they're caused by particles of dust or sometimes water vapour very close to the flash. And there's an area where the illumination of the flash and the coverage of the lens overlap. And that's quite close to the camera. That's mere centimetres away from the camera lens. And in this area here, where the two overlap, you get these orbs appearing. Now, when you're in the room photographing them, you cannot see them. You don't, obviously, when you're doing your investigation, you don't see these little things floating about. You don't see little lights or little balls of energy. They only appear on the photographs. And a lot of paranormal investigators still get quite excited about getting photos with orbs in them. And they see that as some sort of piece of evidence that there is some kind of paranormal activity in the area. Most of us have moved beyond that, but some people still kind of hang on to it. If you go in with a big camera with a flash on top of it, an SLR with an externally mounted flash, you don't get them because the flash is a long way away from the lens, and usually on a large SLR camera, the lens is a much longer focal length, so it's unable to focus on anything very close to the camera. It is so far out of focus. I might use this board. I wasn't planning to, but if you have a camera lens, that is black.
Okay,
how's that? Here's our camera. We'll call it film because it's easier to say than digital sensor. Here's a tree, and the light from the tree goes through the lens and focuses on the film plane, right? Simple. Upside down image of tree appears. Now, when you get something very close to the lens, say a dust particle here, the lens which is focused on the longer distance it might focus back in here somewhere. And what you get here is an image of that dust particle, or more accurately, the flash reflection from the dust particle, appearing as a large circle at the focal plane, at the film or at the digital sensor. And what that means is a point of light which is out of focus will appear on the film as a circle. It's called a circle of confusion. And if it may be that it focuses back here, you still get the circle of confusion. Out of focus points of light appear as circles of confusion. And that's what the orbs are. Now, if you take that theory, the circle of confusion reflects the shape of the lens aperture, which is usually, when you use a flash, round. When you use a camera on automatic, the aperture of the lens opens up to its fullest extent. So you have a round lens, and the point of light actually takes on the shape of the lens. Now, like all good theories, it will predict this. No, it won't. That is orbs created by puffing a cushion and then taking a photo. Orb City. It will predict this. I don't know if you can see that from back there, but these little orbs here, these dust orbs, are actually diamond-shaped, like this. And the reason they're diamond-shaped is because this compact camera has an aperture arrangement that is combined with a shutter, which actually works like this. It does that, or more accurately that. It's a little bit more of a contortion for me. But when it takes a photo, the shutter opens. It opens to f4 or something like that, and you get this diamond-shaped aperture. And the orbs that it's picked up in this case reflect the shape of the lens aperture. So this theory of the flash illuminating the dust particles, the circle of confusion, predicts that if you stop down the lens and fire the flash, it will give you an aperture-shaped orb. So that's a good theory. Where do we go from there? I've covered up my notes. Orbs, baby, We've done that, Orb City, Square Orbs. We've done all that. Okay. There are other camera anomalies. I use this little fella here, which no longer works, but I walked around this basement, and this is one of the photos I've got. Now, that is probably a reflection. I might have been holding the camera, maybe like that, or having my hand partly over the flash, or something. It reflected the flash back into the lens, and what you got was this kind of thing that, if you're looking for a photograph that would show something paranormal, it almost looks like the appearance of a spirit. It is just a reflection of the flash. Other photos with this camera there, the light bulbs are actually, I don't know if you can see these. I might turn the light off again. Probably a good idea. The light bulbs are actually flaring into the lens, and some internal reflections of the light bulbs are making these little glowing spheres. So if you were to crop that image in and just concentrate on the glowing spheres, people might claim them to be spiritual. Here's another one. I like this duck your head, because that's about 5 feet high. There are orbs in that little passage. Something which is related to the orb is lens flare, and that is light entering the lens. You can see with the scene that it's another photo that was sent in to us to examine. The sunlight is behind the trees somewhere, just out of the shot, and what you're getting there, I'll zoom in on it, there's a big blue sort of round looking object, and that is actually lens flare from the sun behind the trees entering the lens. What slightly mystifies me about this particular one is that you would expect it to come all the way around. You'd expect to see a whole circle. Maybe not, I don't know. It's an interesting one, but nevertheless, it is lens flare. It's not paranormal. This is another one. This is at Photospace. We run these photography classes, and we went out on the Wellington waterfront one evening, and one of the students took this photo, which appears to be a lot of lights in the sky.
Squid boats.
Yeah, well, no, but, well, it's something. It's not a squid boat, but it could be. I think what it is actually an internal reflection in the lens of some of these streetlight type things here. They're actually somehow reflecting inside the lens and ending up in a different position, which, when you think about the film of the Kaikoura UFOs, maybe it's a related phenomenon where you have a point source of light somewhere, it enters the lens, camera lens, and this can happen on a digital camera or a film camera, bounces around a bit, and ends up somewhere else on the film. So perhaps, for example, the light on the wing of the aircraft as a point source of light perhaps enters a camera lens, bounces around, and imposes itself on the film in a different position. I don't know. That can happen. And once again, you could claim that was a flight of UFOs over Wellington Harbour. This one here, this was sent by someone in Auckland, and there's a little story. Her son woke up in the middle of the night after having a nightmare and had a sense that there was someone outside the window of his bedroom, and he got his cell phone camera and he took this photograph out the bedroom window at night. Without actually going and examining the scene and examining the cell phone, it's probably a reflection of some light in the window. I'm not sure. But if you look at it, it has the look of, if you like, death, the Grim Reaper. Did anyone see the play downstairs? You've got a sort of skeletal, the appearance of a skeletal face with perhaps a hand coming up and a kind of a hooded cape. Well, I think we've got, how we have eyes, we have a nose, we have teeth or possibly hand coming up. It's all imagination, as you're well aware. There's an effect called pareidolia, P-A-R-E-I-D-O-L-I-A. Some people call it matrixing. And that is I'm sure you're all aware of this. From birth, when we first recognise human faces, we have a tendency to see human faces and all sorts of things and random patterns and logs and rocks and bark and in strange reflections and photographs. And this one came in quite recently. It looks, or the person who sent it in said, there is the shape of a human face behind the woman. Can you see it? I don't know if you guys can see it from over there. The human face is sort of here. And, you know, she showed it around all her friends, and they all think it's a ghost. And anyway, she sent it in to Strange Occurrences and I think also NZPI for their analysis. And I pretty much came back, or we came back with, it's something, maybe a smear on the lens, being picked up by a reflection of the camera flash. We know the camera flash went off because I'm pointing at the wrong thing, because the bright area on the right here is illuminated and you can see reflections in the background. And it's just one of those things that looks like a ghost, but it isn't. And, you know, we had this correspondence and I put this up on the website. We're not being absolutely definitive about it. You know, on the Strange Occurrences website, if you guys look at it, we've got these photos up, we've got the sort of analysis of it, but we're not saying anything with 100% certainty. Well, we'll say it appears to be this, or this seems to be the cause, but we won't actually give a definitive 100% that is a camera flash reflected in a smear in the lens. We leave it open. We weren't there, we don't have all the evidence, we don't have the context of the photo being taken, and we kind of leave it open-ended, and I get the email back saying, well, that's fine. We still think it's a ghost. Okay, cool. Here's another one.
Oh, that looks like a person.
Yeah. I pixelated her face out. It was pretty blurry. Have a look at this area on the top there.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
I'm becoming a believer.
So I'm getting you guys. I brightened it up a bit so you can see it from the back, maybe. I brightened it up a bit more. Does it start to look like a pot plant? You know, like a little rubber tree. I don't know what it is. See, what you need is you need a photograph of the same area during the daylight so you can see what it is. You need a better photo. Here's another one that was sent in quite recently. And there was a similar one on the Stuff website. There was a story on the Stuff website last week. Similar to this, where something in the scene has the appearance of being a ghost or a human being. And in this one, and I've zoomed up on it a little bit for you, you have this thing in the middle here, which has a sort of a shape like perhaps a woman standing there. But I think it's probably a combination of a post and a twig and a bit of a shadow. Now, I've emailed the person back and asked them, do they have any other photographs they took around the garden? Yes, they have them, but they're on an old laptop and they can't extract them and they can't send them to me, unfortunately. But I think that if we looked at some other photographs of the area, we would see the objects which in fact make up that arrangement. Now, the common thing about all of the photographs I've just showed you, with the possible exception of the one that the boy took with a cell phone camera, is that at the time when the photo was taken, there was no sense of anything paranormal. People didn't think that they were photographing a ghost. They didn't see anything. They were just taking a photo of a garden, or a photograph of their mother in the kitchen, or a photograph of a baby. And the orbs appear when you review the photograph. You know, the funny looking reflection appears. You only see these things when you review the photographs later on. So they're not evidence of anything that was happening at the time. They're just photographic anomalies that have kind of appeared. And people notice them later and they send them in. This is another one where I don't know if you can see in this little window. It might be a bit of a stretch for you guys. But there appears to be a person, right?
A spooky person.
Well, I'm obviously I'm scaring people. They're running for cover. Good job. This is like mid-afternoon and not in the middle of the night, or you'll all be. But what you see with this photo is that there is a garage, and behind the garage are some trees which are capturing the late light of the evening. And you can draw a little map of the scene based on the reflection in the window. And if you extrapolate, the garage extends, and this is probably another tree coming down here, and the trunk is being somewhat illuminated by the sunlight. And what you're seeing that looks like a human face is probably a bit of tree trunk, which is out of the original shot. It's only shown in reflection. And some of you might have seen this one because it's got a bit of publicity. And I spent a bit of time with this, and again, pareidolia. I don't think that there is an actual third person in this photograph between the boy and the girl. I think that if there was a third person there, you can see between them grass. I think if there was a third person there, you wouldn't see the gap underneath. And more importantly, there's a little bit of light just up here, but coming in between their heads. Now, if there was an actual third person sticking their head in the middle, I don't think that bit of light would be there. I think the top of their head would block it.
It could be a non-person entity very easily.
Yes. I think that it is the girl's scarf. She's got a scarf wrapped around her head, and maybe a bit of it's hanging down. It's something like that. But it has the appearance of a person. I think it's a bit of her scarf, and the bit that looks like a mouth is probably a bit of her hair coming out. But, you know, this photo's been around in the last few months, and it really has the appearance of a human face. All of these are examples of pareidolia, random arrangements of objects that look like people. And I guess the conclusion of that section on photography is that, and this would go to include all the photographs I've seen in books and generally published, and most of the video, I don't think that any photograph or video shows a ghost. And I'll extrapolate that to say that I don't think that you can photograph a ghost. I leave myself open to be proved wrong, but everything I've seen, I can find a pretty good explanation for that's highly likely to be correct or close to correct. So that's the area of the talk, I guess, where I claim to have some expertise, and I think I'm standing on pretty solid ground. Okay. I don't even know if I should get into this. But the question of what a ghost is, I'm just going to put this very quickly, because I think that most people in the room and myself probably do not hold with the idea of an immortal soul or life after death. Some people will. I don't think most people in the room do. I don't have any evidence of that I'm prepared to believe. So I'm thinking that I do think that people experience ghosts. All we have is anecdotal evidence, and I know what the shortcomings of anecdotal evidence are, but there's a huge accumulation of it. Some of it is corroborated, some of it is by people who you would have to think are pretty reliable and good sources. It's kind of stacking up, and I would say people experience things that they think may be ghosts. Now, what is a ghost? I would say one of the big assumptions that we're kind of lumbered with is that a ghost is somehow the spirit of a dead person. Well, I don't know about that. Why don't we put that aside, and why don't we think of an explanation, perhaps, in the model of time and how time works. I know that it's a cliche to compare time to a river, but I'm going to do it anyway. A river, the flow of a river is complex, yeah? Things flow at different rates, some things get hung up, some things turn in little circles, some things even seem to go backwards. And like everything else, the model of time that we use every day, like to organise this conference or to measure things, you know, is a line, and it progresses at one direction at a set rate. Well, we already know that that doesn't apply at very high speeds, and the rest of it in high gravitational fields, it changes. But what happens if the sort of day-to-day way that time works is really nothing like a straight line, and that model is very simplified. And the model is perhaps a little bit more like this. And that might allow us to, or some people, to actually perceive things which have already happened. And it may be, and this is pure speculation and conjecture, I can't say that, that what people experience as a ghost is not in fact a dead person, but perhaps somebody who, according from their own point of reference, is actually alive and going about their life. And I know that's not entirely new theory, but it's a different way of coming at it other than the idea that a ghost is a dead person and is a spirit. It's just a different way of looking at things. I know it sounds a bit sapphire and steel, but you know, it may be that if we ever get to a unified theory of everything, you know what I mean, something that unifies quantum theory, and if we ever get there, and relativity, it may be that somewhere in that continuum there is a model of time that allows for the perception of ghosts. Who knows? I don't know. I live and wait, but it'll take a greater brain than mine to figure it out. Have we got time for any questions? Because it's sort of gone over a bit.
I'll leave that up so we have some light. And we now have Photoshop, GIMP, all sorts of ways of touching up.
Yeah.
Is there a non-visual way of measuring a photograph to tell whether it's been tampered with? So what I mean is, can you take the digital image and apply it to, you know, measure the algorithm of it and go, that's been tampered with? Or does it still rely on human judgment?
I would say there probably is.
Yeah.
But you'd have to get into things like the JPEG compression algorithm.
Yep.
However, one thing I do a lot when anybody sends me a photograph, I bring it up in Photoshop and I look at the file data in Photoshop.
Yep.
And you can view it in much other software as well. And it tells you things like the model of camera, the focal length, the shutter speed, whether the flash fired, the pixel dimensions, etc.,
right.
etc.
Yes.
And that's a really good starting place.
So you could very quickly find a badly done fraud.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It tells you what kind of camera was taken and all sorts of data, which you can then apply to your interpretation of that photograph.
Right. This is a fascinating talk, of course. The interesting thing is, of course, these people didn't do that, so they're even greater believers, aren't they? You know, it's the ones who kind of, oh, yes, yeah. James, that was fascinating. You're around for the rest of the conference, I hope.
Absolutely.
Take a photograph of this one.